You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Janae Cummings.
And I'm Scott Weddle. This is the Daily Local News for Wednesday, November 30th, 2016.
This is a group of people who have galvanized the world with their resistance. So they're the front line right now.
Tomorrow, a local group begins a 31-day demonstration in solidarity with the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe in North Dakota. We'll have more on those later in the show in today's WFHB Community Report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, Richard Fish says you're being spied on. That's on a new edition of our Consumer Watchdog segment, Better Beware. But first, your daily headlines.
Carrier Corporation says it has made a deal to back off on its plans to move hundreds of jobs to Mexico. The company stated it has agreed to keep nearly 1,000 manufacturing jobs in Indianapolis. That follows plans announced 9 months ago to move all 1,400 jobs out of the country. Details about the arrangement are scarce. Carrier says it reached the agreement with President-elect Donald Trump as well as Vice President-elect Mike Pence. The New York Times reports the state of Indiana is expected to give economic incentives to Carrier, although it's not clear what those incentives may be. The federal government would also theoretically have some leverage in negotiations with Carrier. Its parent company does billions of dollars of work for the federal government. And it's not clear yet which jobs will stay in Indianapolis or whether Carrier will seek to cut employee pay. The highest paid employees at the Indianapolis facility earn $26 per hour, according to the Indy Star. In a statement today, Democratic Senator Joe Donnelly described the announcement as welcome news. But Donnelly also notes that hundreds of workers at the Carrier facility are still slated to lose their jobs, as are 700 workers at the UTech facility in Huntington. Donnelly says some other Hoosier companies are also planning to move jobs out of the country.
The Monroe County Community School Corporation is working toward becoming a Communities and Schools affiliate in an effort to help kids stay in school. Grant coordinator Carol Gardner told the MCCSC Board of Trustees earlier this month that the Communities and Schools program will complement support the school corporation already gives.
CIS affiliates partner with local businesses, social services, healthcare providers, volunteers across the country, providing mentoring, self-esteem building, academic support, connecting students with food, school supplies, healthcare in their community. And we do that with the support of the organization of CIS.
According to the Communities and Schools website, the organization has 161 affiliates over 25 states and the District of Columbia. Gardner said three Indiana counties, Clark, Wayne, and Lake counties, already have successful programs that have produced higher graduation rates. Gardner said the Cook Group and the Community Foundation have agreed to be sponsors for the program. In other business, the board approved advertising for bids for transportation contractors. Director of Business Operations Tim Thrasher said many existing contracts with individual operators will expire at the end of the current school year.
In addition, we've recommended that we increase the number of contracted routes that we bid to 43 routes. And that's because we're still experiencing problems with hiring and retaining enough school corporation drivers of corporation-owned buses to provide transportation services for our students to and from school.
32 of the school district's 119 bus routes are currently served by independent contractors. Thrasher clarified the move was not meant to replace current drivers who want to remain with the school corporation. School board member Keith Klein asked Thrasher about statewide competition for bus service.
Can you explain how this can happen if, in fact, all the corporations in the state are in competition for available bus drivers? What are you hoping will come out of this?
One of the major changes that we've made this time is opening it up to fleet contracts. in order to expand the number of contractors that may be interested. There are some larger contractors out there that don't want to come here for a handful of routes. They need a significant number of routes, need to receive a significant number of routes so that it makes it worth their while to set up an operation here, because with a large number of routes, it will more than likely require a local management entity of some sort to be here to represent them.
Thrasher said individual owner-operators would not be excluded.
We've tried to make it so that as broad a range of interested people as want to bid can bid. So that's the reason that we've expanded and are now considering fleet contracts in addition to any individuals who may wish to bid, or in case some of our current owner-operators wish to expand the number of routes that they bid on from a single route.
Board member Janine Butler said fleet drivers will be subject to the same background checks and MCCSC rules and regulations that current MCCSC bus drivers are. Earlier in the meeting, Superintendent Judy DeMuth thanked the community for passing the property tax referendum that is expected to bring the school corporation an additional $7.5 million per year over the next 6 years.
We are extremely thankful to our community for passing a major referendum that will continue a lot of the services that you see in the schools each and every day. And we really appreciate the efforts of many, many people.
DeMuth said more than 300 volunteers had worked to gather support for the referendum.
The Ellisville Town Council is considering changing its rates for sewer service. On Monday, the council was presented with a cost of service study conducted by H.J. Umball and Associates. CPA Doug Baldessari said the costs associated with providing sewer service have risen since the last study was done in 2008.
The operating expenses increased 14.4%. That seems like a lot, but it's been 8 years. That's 1.8% per year, so that's when you think about health insurance and payroll increases and other things, that's certainly right in line. There's a lease payment has been added, new utility department building, about $90,000 per year. And then the capital improvement and equipment replacement increases are about $78,000. Most of that is for a phosphorus treatment unit.
Baldessari said the sewer rate is composed of a fixed base rate plus what he termed a flow charge based on usage. According to the cost of service study, the average user in Ellettsville could see a decrease in their sewer bill.
The average residential bill for 4,000 gallons will decrease by $5 per month, $5.31 per month. So the lower base charges will reduce the monthly bills for your lowest volume users, and your higher volume users will see a moderate increase due to that increase in the flow charge.
Ellisville also provides sewer service to East Richland, which Baldessari says could also expect a reduction in cost.
So you see their total costs for the year based on that flow, it would change with flow, or $568,000 compared to the current of $728,000. So you see some reduction there, and you would assume that there would be a reduction because $715,000 a year of debt service requirement is going away.
Baldessari is proposing adding a capacity charge for any new sewer connections added in the service area. The proposed rates would be within the range of rates currently charged by other towns of similar size, such as Bedford and Edinburgh.
Rates in Indiana continue to go up, especially sewer rates. So your rates look very favorable at this point, your sewer rates.
According to town attorney Darla Brown, statutory procedure must be followed in order for the town to raise its sewer rates. The town council took no action, but will continue to consider the study.
This week, the Indiana Department of Environmental Management celebrates America Recycles Day, an annual call to encourage Hoosiers to save natural resources and energy by reducing, reusing, and recycling used items. A wide variety of materials, including beverage cups, soup cans, plastic containers, newspapers, and even obsolete electronics, can be recycled into new products. The average American generated 2.68 pounds of trash per day in 1960, and presently that number has increased to 4.4 pounds per day. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Janae Cummings.
And I'm Scott Weddle. Tomorrow at noon, local residents are set to begin a month-long action in solidarity with the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe in North Dakota. WFHB News Director Joe Crawford spoke with a local organizer for today's WFHB Community Report.
Reporting for WFHB, I'm Joe Crawford. I am joined on the phone today by Pam Warren. She's a local community organizer with the Local350.org. That's, of course, an organization dedicated to fighting climate change. And starting tomorrow, the Local350.org group is planning to hold actions on the Courthouse Square here in Bloomington every day for a month in solidarity with the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe, which, of course, has been resisting development of the Dakota Access Pipeline. Pam, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
So, Pam, just tell us what it is that you're planning, what these actions are going to be on the Courthouse Square, and how this came to be.
Well, a few days ago, the Standing Rock Sioux requested that people all over the world stand in solidarity with them throughout the month of December. That was after they received an eviction notice from the Army Corps of Engineers, and the North Dakota governor also evicted them. There are groups everywhere that are standing in solidarity with the Standing Rock Sioux. We're the local group, and we'll be at the Courthouse Square at the southeast corner of the square at Walnut and Kirkwood every day from 12 to 1. And I do realize that that includes Christmas Day.
So what is it that propelled you and specifically this local group of 350.org, why you being involved in this?
We are involved with it because 350.org has given their word to stand in solidarity with the Standing Rock Sioux in this battle to keep the Dakota Access Pipeline from putting a pipe underneath the Missouri River, which very possibly could contaminate the only water source for literally millions of Americans. They are protecting the water for everyone, not just themselves, but they've run the pipeline across the reservation. And so we're essentially in a modern-day Indian war. Once again, America has not kept the treaty they made.
And what are we looking to see on the Courthouse Square? What kinds, when you say there are going to be actions every day starting at noon, what are you planning to do?
Well, we have signs, and whoever wants to come can come. We did this out at the Army Corps of Engineers at Lake Monroe on November 15th. We had chants and speakers. I don't know that we will have speakers every day. It is finals time.
Can you say what you're hoping that this local action does, what it accomplishes? There are going to be folks seeing this who might not necessarily know even what 350.org is. What are you hoping to accomplish with these local actions?
Well, whenever I'm out doing this, I'm answering questions and people are signing up because most people are very concerned about the climate crisis, and they're not deniers, but they don't know what to do to participate. And this gives them a global organization to sign up with locally to follow exactly what's happening, what's being done all over the world, which is trying to stop the proliferation of fossil fuels and pipelines and to get the banks to divest from doing it, and universities and churches and everyone.
I think that this particular cause, this fight at Standing Rock, seems to have hit a nerve that other protests might not have really done. You know, even in Bloomington, more than 1,000 miles away, we've had quite a few folks who've gone up to Standing Rock. And there's been a rally and a march through the streets of Bloomington just a couple of weeks ago. Why do you think this particular issue has resonated the way that it has?
Because they're not fighting back. They're sitting prayerfully. They're standing prayerfully. It is the largest gathering of indigenous people from all over the world.
in hundreds, well, forever. I was going to say hundreds of years, but probably ever. It is an organized stand by our First Nation citizens saying, no, that you can't do this to us anymore. We're not going to do it. They are fighting it legally, passively, peacefully, but they're fighting it. And I think everyone wants to stand up for that. You know, we weren't there at Wounded Knee. We weren't there any of the other times, and we can be there now.
I wonder what you think that activist groups like yours, again, you're with the local 350.org, what can they do now? And I ask that knowing that we're preparing to inaugurate the only major leader of a country in the world who openly rejects the fight against climate change. What do you think the role of activist groups like yours is over the next few years?
A daily battle. We are a large organization of citizen activists. You know, we're the feet on the ground. We will be fighting everything, every step of the way, if it's not the right thing. And the right thing, according to lowering CO2 levels and methane levels, is clearly mapped out. And so that means we have to switch to sustainable energy sources, and we can no longer depend on the fossil fuels. And so that will be the major objective of what we're doing. But this is water. This is life. And this is a group of people who have galvanized the world with their resistance. So they're the front line right now.
Pam Warren, you are leading a group that's going to be holding actions on the Courthouse Square here in Bloomington at noon every day for a month, starting tomorrow, in solidarity with the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe, who's resisting the development of the Dakota Access Pipeline. What can people do if they want to get involved?
Meet us there tomorrow at noon. Sign up. And that just means giving me a way to contact you. So you can be there every day at noon or as many days as you want to be. And if you only have 10 minutes, you can stay for 10 minutes. You don't have to be there for an hour. But come and stand for the Standing Rock Sioux. It's an important, vastly important issue. Thank you.
Pam Warren, thanks for talking with us.
Okay.
Officials in North Dakota announced yesterday that they plan to try and block the flow of supplies from reaching protesters at Standing Rock. State officials said they would seek to impose fines on anyone caught bringing prohibited items into the main camp.
Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service, now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
Support for WFHB also comes from Growing Opportunities, a social business project of the South Central Community Action Program. Growing Opportunities is an urban hydroponic farm that provides job training opportunities for low-income people with barriers to employment, especially people with disabilities. They grow produce that is sold to local eateries, supermarkets, hospitals, and schools. Information available at 812-332-2168 or online at insccap.org.
Up next, our weekly consumer watchdog segment, Better Beware.
Welcome to Better Beware. Here's your consumer watchdog from WFHB Community Radio with the latest information and helpful hints designed to keep your head out of the clouds, your feet on the ground, and your money in your pocket.
Have you ever been on television? The answer is yes, whether you know it or not. Security cameras are everywhere, in stores, theaters, offices, even on the street. Anytime you leave home, it's almost certain that you're going to be seen and recorded. And maybe you don't even have to leave home. Now, early TV cameras were so big and heavy they had to be on wheels and have a crew to move them around. And they cost so much only a major corporation could afford them. But not anymore. Today, video cams have shrunk to where they can be hidden in the head of a screw or stuffed into one of the little holes in acoustic ceiling tile. Smartphones and tablets have them, and they're so cheap that anybody can afford them. These itty-bitty spy cameras have become a real problem all over this country and around the world. Private investigators use them to gather information on their subjects. Corporations use them to spy on rivals. And individual people use them to spy on others and get busted for doing it sometimes. You may remember the well-publicized case of a college student who secretly taped his roommate having gay sex, shared the recording online, and drove the victim to suicide. This year, in New Jersey alone, cops arrested a man for hiding a cam in a theater rehearsal space, collared an employee of a dialysis center for putting one in a ladies' restroom, and busted a teacher for making video recordings up the skirts of 24 female students. Cams have been found in schools, fitting rooms, lavatories, and locker rooms of both sexes. But for every spyer or voyeur who gets caught, there are probably hundreds or thousands who don't. Because you can put a cam in anything these days. Restroom fixtures, vents, wall plates, ceiling fans, books, shoes, even the thread hole on a shirt button. The pictures, sometimes sound, can be stored on a tiny chip or even transmitted, wired or wireless, to a recorder somewhere else. So how can you protect yourself? Well, you can find apps for smartphones and relatively cheap gadgets which claim to detect hidden cameras. They can work, but sophisticated equipment to be certain of finding any hidden cam or bug can cost more than $100,000. You can hire a professional to sweep a room or building, and more schools are doing that before classes begin, but that can cost thousands. Mostly, you can keep a lookout for anything odd, like two smoke alarms in a room, or anything left lying around in a public space. And if you have a nanny cam or a security cam in your home, it had better be locked down with a strong password, or internet hackers could be watching it from anywhere in the world. Welcome to the 21st century, and be careful where you do anything you don't want to see on the internet. I'm Richard Fish for WFHB News and Public Affairs.
Better Beware comes to you from WFHB Bloomington, Indiana. Find all our episodes at WFHB.org. If you can help put the kibosh on a con, email beware@WFHB.org. Remember, swindlers never give a sucker an even break.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Joe Crawford and Kathy Norton, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, in partnership with Community Access Television Services. Better Beware was produced by Richard Fish. Our feature was produced by Joe Crawford.
Our engineers today, Heather Perry and Rob Schoon. Our theme music provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Joe Crawford. For WFHB, this is Scott Weddle.
And I'm Janae Cummings. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. Recognized among the best newscasts for the past 3 years by the Indiana chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. Send inquiries to news@WFHB.org. Stay tuned for Standing Room Only, our award-winning weekly lecture series coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@WFHB.org.